Chapter 5. Projective Geometry. Draw two parallel lines on a large piece of paper. Lay the paper on a flat surface and look at it from a distance. The lines still look straight, but appear to come together. For a more striking example, take a drive down Highway 46 east from Gackle in North Dakota. The road does not bend for about 30 miles, and its boundaries will appear to intersect at an infinitely far away point on the horizon. In projective geometry, such points at infinity are added to the Euclidean plane and are regarded on an equal footing with all other points. In Euclidean geometry, two lines intersect at a unique point unless they are parallel. From the projective perspective, these parallel lines intersect at one of the points at infinity. Experimenting with three pairs of parallel lines in perspective suggests that the corresponding intersection points all lie on a line. In fact, all points at infinity lie on one line, which is therefore called the line at infinity, and our first definition of the projective plane will be as a Euclidean plane with one line adjoining it. In this chapter, we shall explore the geometry of this plane. Projective plane and the line at infinity. Compare the following two paintings. The medieval painting of De Buonsegna represents people, objects and space as they are, paying attention to Euclidean proportions and sizes. The Renaissance painting of Canaletto depicts the three-dimensional space as it looks. The Euclidean geometric proportions have been distorted. The Basilica San Marco on the far side of the square is in reality taller than the arch at the front of the painting, and yet it has been presented as smaller using the concept of perspective. The discovery of perspective led the Renaissance artists to seek geometric schemes that enabled them to represent three-dimensional space filled with objects of various sizes and relative distances on a two-dimensional canvas. The key concept underlying the perspective drawing is the projection. I shall assume that the idealized artist has only one eye represented by a point. The canvas used by the artist is a glass screen put between the scene and the eye. Each point in the scene painted by the artist is connected to his eye by a ray of light, which intersects the screen at some other point. The set of points arising in that way on the screen forms a plane section, which is then turned into a painting. Fixing the position of the artist's eye, but changing, for example by a translation and a rotation, the configuration of the glass screen results in a different painting. And the problem for a mathematician is to determine a relation between the two projections. To gain more insight into what is going on, I shall focus on the simplest example, which is a projection of one line in the Euclidean plane to another such line from a point, capital zero, which does not belong to either of the two lines. Let us call the lines L1 and L2. The point capital P on the line L1 is projected to the point capital Q, which is the intersection of the line L2, with the line containing the segment capital O, capital P. There are two problems with this projection. First, if capital R is the point on L1, such that the segment capital O, capital R is parallel to L2, then capital R is not projected to any point on L2. This problem can be fixed by adding an additional point to L2. Call it a point at infinity, and declaring it to be the image of capital R under the projection. Second, if capital S is the point on L2, such that capital O, capital S is parallel to the line L1, then there is no point on L1 which projects to capital S. We use a similar fix. Extend the line L1 by attaching a point at infinity to it, and declare that this point projects to capital S. This way we have made the projection what mathematicians called a bijection. Every point on the extended line L1 is mapped to some point on extended L2, and conversely, every point on extended L2 is a projection of some point on extended L1. These extended lines are called projective lines. A line on the Euclidean plane is denoted by the set of real numbers to the power of 1, while a projective line is denoted by the symbol capital P to the power of 1. The relation between the two is the symbol of capital P to the power of 1 is equal to the set of real numbers to the power of 1 plus open bracket, infinity, close bracket, where open bracket, infinity, close bracket is the notation for the point we attach to each line. Now I turn to the more realistic projection from point capital O of the plane uppercase pi sub 1 in Euclidean space, the set of real numbers cubed, to another plane, uppercase pi sub 2, which is not parallel to uppercase pi sub 1. We assume that capital O does not belong to any of the two planes, and, as before, define the projection of any point capital P on uppercase pi sub 1 to be the intersection of the line containing points capital P and capital O with the plane uppercase pi sub 2. This time there is a whole line, L, on uppercase pi sub 1, which does not project to any region of uppercase pi sub 2. This is the line of points which lie on the plane containing uppercase O, and is parallel to the plane uppercase pi sub 2. Similarly, there is a line on uppercase pi sub 2 to which no points project. We address both problems by extending the planes uppercase pi sub 1 and uppercase pi sub 2 to projective planes. A projective plane, the symbol of capital P squared, is the Euclidean plane together with a projective line attached at infinity. The symbol of capital P squared equals the set of real numbers squared plus the symbol of capital P to the power of 1. The line at infinity is the vanishing line on an artist's canvas. It is also the line that motorists see on the horizon, where all the sides of straight roads intersect. The de Sarg theorem. Changing the relative positions of planes uppercase pi sub 1 and uppercase pi sub 2 in space results in a different projection. This, in perspective drawing, leads to a different pictorial realization of the same reality, with the glass screen between the artist's eye and the space repositioned. Distances and shapes of objects differ for both projections. For example, a square projects onto a square if the planes uppercase pi sub 2 and uppercase pi sub 1 are parallel, but it will project onto some other quadrilateral if they are not. Some properties do carry over from one projection to another. A straight line will remain straight, a quadrilateral will not turn into a triangle, and two lines intersecting at a point will still intersect, albeit possibly at infinity. The first formal study of the properties shared by all projections was completed by the 17th-century French architect and engineer Gérard de Sarg. One of his findings concerns the relationship between two projections of the same triangle. The two triangles, triangle capital A capital B capital C, and triangle capital A prime capital B prime capital C prime, are in perspective, which means that they are related by a projection from point capital O, not belonging to either of the two triangles. Thus, the lines through the corresponding vertices, capital A and capital A prime, capital B and capital B prime, capital C and capital C prime, all pass through capital O. De Sarg's theorem. If two triangles are in perspective, then the points of intersections of corresponding sides lie on a single line. The proof of De Sarg's theorem is given in two separate cases. When the triangles delta capital A capital B capital C and delta capital A prime capital B prime capital C prime do not lie on the same plane, and when they do. The first case of non-coplanar triangles is more general. I shall split its proof into five steps. In this proof, and in the rest of this chapter, the line, which is necessarily unique, containing two points, capital A and capital B, will be referred to as capital A capital B. There is no risk of confusion, as neither line segments nor orientation appear in projective geometry. Step 1. The planes containing the triangles triangle capital A capital B capital C and triangle capital A prime capital B prime capital C prime intersect in a line, possibly at infinity, which I shall call L. Step 2. The two lines capital O capital A and capital O capital B determine the unique plane uppercase pi, which contains both lines as well as points capital A prime and capital B prime. This plane also contains the lines capital A capital B and capital A prime capital B prime, which intersect at a point capital C double prime. On the plane uppercase pi, this point will be at infinity of uppercase pi if the lines capital A capital B and capital A prime capital B prime are parallel. Step 3. The point capital C double prime is in the plane of both triangles, triangle capital A capital B capital C, and triangle capital A prime capital B prime capital C prime. Therefore, capital C double prime belongs to the line L. Step 4. Apply steps 2 and 3 to the lines capital O capital A and capital O capital C. They intersect at a point capital B double prime on the line L. Similarly, the lines capital O capital B and capital O capital C intersect at capital A double prime on the line L. Step 5. Thus, capital A double prime, capital B double prime and capital C double prime all belong to the same line. Homogeneous coordinates. A drawback in our discussion of the projective plane is that the line at infinity does not appear to be on an equal footing with other lines. I shall remedy this by giving another definition of the projective plane, which treats all lines in a more democratic fashion, and will then prove that the two definitions agree. The projective plane is the space of all lines in Euclidean 3 space set of real numbers cubed, which pass through the origin. This definition links directly with perspective drawing. The origin in the set of real numbers cubed is the position of the artist's eye. Any point in space is linked to the artist's eye by a light ray, which is a straight line through the origin. But all points on the ray will be seen as one by the artist. Thus, two points with coordinates 1, 2, 7 and 2, 4, 14 are identified as they lie on the same line through 0, 0, 0. A line not through the origin, this may be the side of a straight road the artist is painting, is contained in a unique plane through the origin. This line corresponds to a line on the projective plane of the canvas, and conversely, lines in the projective plane correspond to planes through the origin in the set of real numbers cubed. We can use this to prove the important property of the projective plane. P1. Two lines on the projective plane intersect at a point. Indeed, two planes through the origin intersect in a unique line through the origin. But this line, by definition, corresponds to a point on the projective plane, the symbol of capital P, squared. Note that the result we have just established does not hold in Euclidean geometry, where one would have to exclude parallel lines from the statement P1 violates Euclid's axiom E5. The notion of parallelism does not exist in projective geometry, and all pairs of lines are on an equal footing. We need to reconcile this new definition of the projective plane with the previous picture involving adding a line at infinity to the Euclidean plane. To do it, we introduce the coordinate system, capital X, capital Y, capital Z, on the set of real numbers cubed. I am deliberately using capital letters to distinguish these coordinates from the Cartesian coordinates on the plane. Our definition of the projective plane identifies capital X, capital Y, capital Z, with lambda capital X, lambda capital Y, lambda capital Z, where lambda is any non-zero number. Once this identification is made, the coordinates capital X, capital Y, capital Z, not all of which are simultaneously zero, label points on the symbol of capital P squared. They are called the homogeneous coordinates on the projective plane. We can now recover the Euclidean plane together with an adjoining line at infinity as follows. Assume that capital Z is not equal to zero. Then capital X, capital Y, capital Z is identified with capital X divided by capital Z, capital Y divided by Z, 1, and by setting X is equal to the fraction of the numerator capital X and the denominator capital Z, and Y equals the fraction with the numerator capital Y and the denominator capital Z. We have recovered a Euclidean plane with the set of real numbers squared with coordinates X, Y. We have so far excluded all points on the projective plane given by capital X, capital Y, 0. To account for these points, First, assume that capital Y is not equal to zero, in which case capital X, capital Y, zero, can be identified with capital X divided by capital Y, 1, 0. This is a line, the set of real numbers, with the Cartesian coordinate W equals capital X divided by capital Y. We are still not done, as both capital Y and capital Z could have been 0, which leaves us with capital X, 0, 0. This time capital X is definitely not 0, so we can identify this with 1, 0, 0, which is a point on the projective plane. We have therefore proved that the symbol of capital P squared equals the set of real numbers squared plus the set of real numbers to the power of 1 plus, open bracket, point, close bracket. The last two factors, the Euclidean line and a point, combine to give the projective line the symbol of capital P, thus reconciling the two definitions of the projective plane. Conics. We saw in Chapter 2 that not all geometric constructions can be achieved using a compass and ruler or their geometric counterparts, lines and circles. Some of these constructions are made possible if other types of curves are allowed. For example, doubling a cube, which comes down to constructing the cube root of 2, can be accomplished by employing parabolas. The two points of intersection of the parabolas y equals x squared and y squared equals 2x can be found by squaring the first equation and substituting into the second. This gives x to the power of 4 equals 2x, which is solved by x equals 0 and x equals the cube root of 2. Parabolas are examples of conics. A conic is a curve of intersection of a cone with a plane. I shall call the vertex of the cone capital O and the plane defining the conic uppercase pi. I shall also exclude planes which contain the vertex of the cone. Three possible types of conics can be distinguished by examining the plane uppercase pi sub 1, which is parallel to uppercase pi and passes through the vertex capital O. If uppercase pi sub 1 intersects the cone in two lines, then the conic is a hyperbola. If uppercase pi sub 1 is tangent to the cone, then the conic is a parabola. If uppercase pi sub 1 only intersects the cone at its vertex, then the conic is an ellipse. These types of conics were studied in detail by the Greeks in the 2nd century BC, primarily by Apollonius of Perga, who covered the whole theory of conics in 8 volumes. This contains the goat-eating grass definition of ellipse. If you want to cut an ellipse with your lawn, stick 2 pegs into the ground and connect them with a loose but not extendable rope. Attach a hungry goat to the rope so that it can move freely along the rope. The boundary of the region eaten by the goat is an ellipse. This reflects a definition which states that the ellipse is a locus of all points, capital P, on a plane, such that the sum of distances, the absolute value of capital P times capital Q, and the absolute value of capital P times capital R, from capital P to 2 fixed points, capital Q and capital R, is constant. The goat definition of the ellipse is pictorial and accessible, not least for the goat, but it relies on the concepts of Euclidean geometry, such as the total length of the rope. In fact, the natural arena for studying conics is the projective plane. In projective geometry, all conics are the same, as the plane of any conic can be projected onto the plane of any other conic from the vertex of the cone. Thus, every conic is the projection of a circle to the plane of this conic, and all possible conics arise as such projections. The difference between a hyperbola and an ellipse reflects a different choice of canvas. To give an example of a coordinate expression of a conic, take the cone centred at the origin in the set of real numbers cubed given by an equation x squared plus y squared equals z squared, and intersect it with the plane 5z minus 3x minus 20 equals 0. Substituting z from the second equation into the first gives 16x squared minus 120x plus 25y squared minus 400 equals 0. This is an equation of the ellipse, as can be seen by rewriting it as open parenthesis, the fraction with the numerator 4 and the denominator 5 of x minus 3 close parenthesis squared plus y squared equals 25. The general equation of a conic is ax squared plus by squared plus 2cxy plus 2dx plus 2ey plus f equals 0, where a, b, c, d, e, f are constant parameters. In the previous example, a equals 16, b equals 25, c equals 0, d equals negative 60, e equals 0, f equals negative 400. Not all of these parameters can simultaneously be equal to 0, so the number of essential parameters is 5. If, for example, f is not equal to 0, then we can divide both sides of the conic equation by f, and we are left with the ratios a divided by f, b divided by f, c divided by f, d divided by f, and e divided by f as 5 parameters determining the conic. This analytical approach can be used to give a simple, if somewhat tedious, proof of a fact known to the Greeks. There is a unique conic through any given coplanar 5 points, no 3 of which lie on the same line. Let the 5 points, capital P sub 1, capital P sub 2, until capital P sub 5, have coordinates x1, y1, x2, y2, until x5, y5, on the plane of the conic. We substitute x1, y1 to the equation of the conic. It has to hold as capital P sub 1 belongs to the conic, which gives one equation for the 5 parameters. We can do the same with the x-y coordinates of the remaining 4 points. This gives a system of 5 equations whose 5 unknowns are the parameters of the conic. Employing algebra shows that this system has a unique solution, as long as no 3 of the 5 points are collinear. This argument also shows that in general it is not possible to draw a conic through 6 given points. Adding another point would result in 6 equations for 5 unknowns, where there is usually no solution. In what circumstances can a conic be drawn through 6 points? Connecting the 6 points with line segments gives a hexagon. Therefore, an equivalent problem is to find a special property of those hexagons which can be inscribed into a conic. The answer is provided by a theorem stated in 1639 by the French mathematician Blaise Pascal when he was only 16 years old. Pascal's theorem. If a hexagon is inscribed in a conic, then the 3 points of intersections of pairs on opposite sides of the hexagon lie on the same line. Pascal was a contemporary of Desargues, and their works on projective geometry shared the same fate. They were ignored by their contemporaries and largely forgotten for some 200 years. Desargues and Pascal were ahead of their time. Projective geometry was rediscovered and revived by a group of 19th century French mathematicians, primarily Jean-Victor Poncelet. Poncelet was an officer in the French army during Napoleon's invasion of Russia. He was wounded and captured in 1812 and spent a year in a Russian prison, where he studied projective geometry and put it in what we now regard as the modern framework. It is to Poncelet that we owe one of the most remarkable results about conics. The Poncelet theorem is concerned with a pair of distinct conics, which can be drawn as 2 ellipses, one placed inside the other. Pick a point, capital P sub 1, on the outer ellipse, capital A, and draw a line through this point, which is tangent to the inner ellipse, capital B. This line will intersect the ellipse, capital A, at a point, capital P sub 2. Now draw another tangent line to capital B through capital P sub 2. This tangent intersects capital A at another point, capital P sub 3. Iterating the process gives a sequence of points on the outer ellipse, capital A. For a generic choice of 2 ellipses, all points in this sequence are distinct, so none of the tangents will ever cross the initial point, capital P sub 1. There are special pairs of conics, like the one depicted in figure 60b, where, after a finite number of steps, we return to capital P sub 1 and produce an n-gon, described in capital A and circumscribed about capital B. In figure 60b, located in the print version of this book, this happens after 3 iterations. The Poncelet theorem states that if there exists an n-gon inscribed in one conic, capital A, and circumscribed about another conic, capital B, then there exist infinitely many such n-gons. For any point capital P on the conic capital A, there exists an n-gon with capital P as its vertex. Projective duality. The two properties of the projective plane we have uncovered so far are P1. Two lines intersect at a unique point. P2. Two points are contained in a unique line. The second property also holds in Euclidean geometry, but the first one does not if the lines are parallel. The projective point of view puts all lines on equal footing so that, as we have heard, P1 is true for all lines. Moreover, the first property turns into the second property if we replace the words lines by points and points by lines. This is an example of projective duality. It turns out that if such a replacement is made, not only simple statements like P1 and P2 remain true, but every theorem in projective geometry does too. The arena for the projective duality is the interplay between the projective plane, the symbol of capital P squared, and the dual projective plane. We shall call it the symbol of capital P squared sub star, which is the space of all lines in the symbol of capital P squared. One way to visualize projective duality is to draw the projective plane and its dual, as shown in figure 61, and replace points on the symbol of capital P squared by lines on the symbol of capital P squared sub star, and vice versa in such a way that the properties P1 and P2 are interchanged by the duality. We can instead make the duality transparent and draw points and their dual lines on one projective plane. In this figure, the duality is based on the conic capital C, which I have chosen to be an ellipse. To find the line dual to a point capital P outside the ellipse, draw two lines through capital P which are tangent to capital C. The thick line P connecting the tangency points is the dual of capital P. In the limiting case when capital P lies on the conic, the dual line is just the tangent to capital C at capital P. What about if the point, call this one capital Q, is inside the ellipse? We then take any two lines through capital Q, each line intersecting capital C at a pair of points. The two tangents to capital C emanating from one of the pairs intersect at some point, call it capital R, outside the ellipse. The tangents emanating from the second pair intersect at another point, capital S. By property P1, there is a unique line containing the points capital R and capital S. This is the dual line to capital Q. The concept of projective duality extends to smooth curves in the projective plane. A tangent line to any point on a curve, gamma, in the symbol of capital P squared, corresponds to a point in the dual projective plane. Thus, the one-parameter family of tangents to all points of gamma defines a curve in the symbol of capital P squared sub star. In particular, the dual curve to a conic is also a conic. What theorem in projective geometry arises as the statement dual to the Pascal theorem about a hexagon inscribed inside a conic capital C? In the dual plane, the six vertices of the hexagon are turned into six edges of a polygon circumscribed about capital C. The three collinear points of intersections in Pascal's theorem become the three diagonals of the polygon connecting the opposite edges. The statement dual to Pascal's theorem is that these diagonals intersect at one point. This remarkable fact was discovered by the French mathematician Charles Brianchon in 1810. The proof of Brianchon's theorem follows from the principle of duality applied to Pascal's theorem. I shall use the duality based on the conic capital C and split the proof into three steps. Step 1. The vertex capital A of the circumscribed hexagon is dual to the line A of the inscribed hexagon. This duality relation also holds for the vertices capital B, capital C, capital D, capital E, capital F, and the lines B, C, D, E, F. Step 2. The line connecting the vertices capital A and capital D is, by the principle of duality, dual to the intersection point of the lines A and D. Step 3. The three points of intersections of pairs of lines A, D, C, F, and B, E lie on the same line, Z. Therefore, by the principle of duality, the three lines capital A, capital D, capital C, capital F, and capital B, capital E intersect at the point capital Z. This is the point dual to the point Z, and this proves the theorem. In this picture, the duality is taken with respect to the conic capital C, which is unchanged by the duality operation. While the correspondence between the projective plane and its dual can be revealed by drawing pictures, it can also be understood analytically, using the homogeneous coordinates. If X, Y, Z are the homogeneous coordinates of a point in the symbol of capital P squared, then an equation of a line in the symbol of capital P squared, or equivalently, a plane through the origin in the set of real numbers cubed, is capital A times capital X plus capital B times capital Y plus capital C times capital Z equals zero. The numbers capital A, capital B, capital C, not all of which can be zero, are coordinates on the dual projective plane, the symbol of capital P squared sub star. The projective duality is based on interpreting this equation in two ways. Fixing a point with coordinates capital A, capital B, capital C in the symbol of capital P squared sub star gives a line in the symbol of capital P squared, as we have already seen. We can instead fix a point with capital X, capital Y, capital Z in the symbol of capital P squared. This gives a line in the symbol of capital P squared sub star. Projective geometry in the 21st century. Interest in projective geometry came in waves. The first wave was the work on geometric perspective, formalized by the artists Leonardo da Vinci, Piero della Francesca, and Albrecht Dürer. Then, 100 years later, came the second wave, following the theorems of Pascal and Desargues. These were then forgotten for 2 centuries and revived by Poncelet and his followers in the 19th and 20th centuries. Research in projective geometry declined in the second half of the 20th century, and the subject has all but disappeared from schools. However, the last 3 decades have seen a renaissance of projective geometry in both applied and pure forms. An example of the former is the problem of reconstructing a 3-dimensional scene from a sequence of 2-dimensional images in computer graphics. Rather than capturing the space through its projection onto a plane, one aims to recover the spatial proportions and distances accurately from the knowledge of several projections. The mathematical details and algorithms used here are based on comparing the homogeneous coordinates of 2 or more projective planes. It is likely that the demands of virtual reality software will lead to more interest in projective geometry. In pure mathematics, researchers focused on projective differential geometry, where properties of curves and surfaces, generalizing projective lines and planes, are studied on general manifolds, which we encountered in Chapter 4. From the point of view of this geometry, the Euclidean plane, the Poincaré disk, and the round sphere are all equivalent, as there exist projections mapping the geodesics of any of these geometries to the geodesics of the other two. These 3 geometries have constant Gaussian curvature, positive for the sphere, negative for the disk, and 0 for the plane. It is not possible to find a projection of a general curved surface with non-constant Gaussian curvature onto a plane in a way which maps its geodesics to straight lines. Until recently, it was not known how to determine whether a surface covered with curves, with 1 curve through each point and in each direction, can be projected onto another surface, such that the curves are mapped to geodesics, minimizing some distance function. This question, known as the matrizability problem in projective geometry, was posed by the French mathematician Roger Liouville, who, in 1889, explained how to encode a given family of curves into a function, f, of 3 variables. The problem was solved in 2009, and the solution relied heavily on symbolic computer algebra only developed in the 21st century. The criteria for matrizability reduce to the vanishing of algebraic expressions which contain over 2,000 terms involving the function f and its derivatives up to order 8. The problem of Liouville can be generalized from surfaces to manifolds of more than 2 dimensions, where the solution is still not known.